Welcome to So Ordered, where we create audio readings of SCOTUS decisions to make them more accessible to the public. At the time of creating this podcast, the Supreme Court of the United States does not release audio of the court's decisions. Our mission is to make it so the public can be better informed on decisions of the court by using AI to generate audio of written opinions. The case before us today is Bost v. Illinois Board of Elections, docket number 24568, decided January 14, 2026. Before reading the opinion itself, here is a brief summary of the case and the questions presented. Illinois law requires election officials to count mail-in ballots postmarked or certified no later than Election Day and received within 2 weeks of Election Day. Congressman Michael Bost and two other political candidates filed a lawsuit claiming that counting ballots received after Election Day violates the federal statutes that set Election Day as the Tuesday following the first Monday in November. The district court dismissed the case, and the Seventh Circuit affirmed on the ground that the candidates lacked standing. The question presented was whether the petitioners, as federal candidates, have pleaded sufficient factual allegations to show Article III standing to challenge state time, place, and manner regulations concerning their federal elections. The court held, as a candidate for office, Congressman Bost has standing to challenge the rules that govern the counting of votes in his election. Candidates have a concrete and particularized interest in those rules, regardless of whether the rules harm their electoral prospects or increase the cost of their campaigns. Chief Justice Roberts delivered the opinion of the court, in which Justices Thomas, Alito, Gorsuch, and Kavanaugh joined. Justice Barrett filed an opinion concurring in the judgment, in which Justice Kagan joined. Justice Jackson filed a dissenting opinion, in which Justice Sotomayor joined. As a reminder, the audio is an AI-generated reading of a published opinion of the Supreme Court of the United States. The voice you will hear has been synthesized to loosely resemble that of the justice that wrote the opinion. All tone, inflection, pacing, and emphasis are produced by the AI model and should not be attributed to any justice. The text itself has been lightly adapted to aid in the creation of the spoken delivery. This is a project to attempt to make court decisions more accessible to the public, and any substantive changes during the reading are completely unintentional. Please visit www.supremecourt.gov to read the opinion published by the court. You can find a link directly to the opinion in this episode's description. As the audio is AI-generated, you may hear some audio glitches, including odd pronunciation, noticeable pauses, or repeated words. We're continually working to improve our process to reduce these, and we appreciate you sticking with us as we improve the listening experience. The following is the opinion of the court in Bost v. Illinois Board of Elections.
Three political candidates challenged Illinois' procedure for counting mail-in ballots received after Election Day. We consider whether the candidates have standing to maintain their suit. Illinois law requires election officials to count mail-in ballots postmarked or certified no later than Election Day and received within 2 weeks of Election Day. In May of 2022, Congressman Michael Bost and presidential elector nominees Laura Palestrini and Susan Sweeney, the petitioners, sued the Illinois State Board of Elections and its executive director, the respondents, claiming that counting ballots received after Election Day violates federal law. They principally contended that doing so conflicts with Title II United States Code, Section 7, and Title III United States Code, Section 1, which set Election Day as the Tuesday following the first Monday in November. In their complaint and declarations, petitioners asserted several bases for standing as candidates. They first argued that they were entitled to have their election results certified with votes received in compliance with the federal Election Day statutes, and they alleged that they rely on provisions of federal and state law in conducting their campaigns, including, in particular, resources allocated to the post-election certification process. Congressman Bost further explained that the late counting of ballots would require him to organize, fundraise, and run his campaign for 14 additional days. This, in turn, would cost his campaign time, money, volunteers, and other resources by, for example, requiring the campaign to send poll watchers to monitor late arriving ballots. He also alleged that he risked injury if untimely and illegal ballots caused him to lose his election, and because his margin of victory may be reduced. a diminished margin of victory would lead to the public perception that his constituents have concerns about his job performance, which would influence future voters, congressional leadership, donors, and potential political opponents. The district court held that petitioners lacked standing and dismissed the suit. Petitioners appealed, and the Seventh Circuit affirmed in 2024. The court concluded that the cost to monitor vote counting after Election Day could not support standing because those costs would have been voluntarily incurred to avoid a hypothetical future harm, an election defeat. In doing so, the court noted that Congressman Bost had won the last election with 75% of the vote. It also rejected petitioners' asserted competitive injury, reasoning that they do not, and cannot, allege that the majority of the votes that will be received and counted after Election Day will break against them. Finally, it dismissed petitioners' asserted injury based on an inaccurate vote tally as unduly speculative because the election is months away and the voting process has not even started. Judge Scudder dissented in part. In his view, Congressman Bost had standing based on the extra costs his campaign would incur to monitor the counting of late arriving ballots. We granted certiorari in 2025. Under Article 3 of the Constitution, plaintiffs must have a personal stake in a case to have standing to sue. They must, in other words, be able to answer a basic question: what's it to you? Congressman Bost has an obvious answer. He is a candidate for office, and a candidate has a personal stake in the rules that govern the counting of votes in his election. An unlawful election rule can injure a candidate in several ways. It might cause him to lose the election, it might require him to expend additional resources, or it might decrease his vote share and damage his reputation. Respondents concede that each of these harms can be legally cognizable, but they contend that Congressman Bost failed to adequately plead any such harm here. We need not resolve whether respondents are right, because winning, and doing so as inexpensively and decisively as possible, are not a candidate's only interests in an election. To start, candidates also have an interest in a fair process. Candidates are not common competitors in the economic marketplace. They seek to represent the people, and their interest in that prize cannot be severed from their interest in the electoral process, a process of the most fundamental significance under our constitutional structure. Win or lose, candidates suffer when the process departs from the law. Thus, the long shot and shoe-in alike would suffer harm if a state chose to conduct its election by, say, flipping a coin. The result of such an election would not reflect the will of the people, and the candidates would lose the opportunity to compete for the people's support. So, too, similar harms would result from less dramatic departures. For example, if a state decided to discard a random 10% of cast votes. Whether these decisions help, hurt, or have no effect on a candidate's electoral prospects, they deprive the candidate of a fair process and an accurate result. Such harm to candidates is in no sense common to all members of the public. Voters, to be sure, also have a general interest in an accurate vote tally. But a candidate's interest differs in kind. An unfair and inaccurate election plainly affects those who compete for the support of the people in a different way than it affects the people who lend their support. We have no occasion to theorize about the significance of these relative interests or the sincerity with which they are held. What matters is that the harm candidates suffer is distinct from that suffered by the people generally. Those who spend untold time and resources seeking to claim the right to voice the will of the people have an undeniably different and more particularized interest in knowing what that will is. Rules that undermine the integrity of the electoral process also undermine the winner's political legitimacy. The counting of unlawful votes, or discarding of lawful ones, erodes public confidence that the election results reflect the people's will. And when public confidence in the election results falters, public confidence in the elected representative follows. To the representative, that loss of legitimacy or its diminution is a concrete harm. Reputational harms, as a general matter, are classic Article III injuries, but they are particularly concrete for those whose very jobs depend on the support of the people. Candidates, in short, are not mere bystanders in their own elections. They have an obvious personal stake in how the result is determined and regarded. Departures from the preordained rules cause them particularized and concrete harm. The same is true of competitors in other contests. Each runner in a 100-meter dash, for example, would suffer if the race were unexpectedly extended to 105 meters. Whether a particular runner expects to finish strong or fall off the pace in the final 5 meters, all would be deprived of the chance to compete for the prize that the rules define. The fastest to run 105 meters has not won the 100-meter dash, and in much the same way, an unlawful extension of vote counting deprives candidates of the opportunity to compete for election under the Constitution and laws of the United States. Respondents and the dissent dismiss these harms, which plainly affect candidates in a personal and individual way, as generalized grievances. And they suggest that in order to have standing, plaintiff candidates must show some substantial risk that a rule will cause them to lose the election, prevent them from achieving a legally significant vote threshold, or damage their reputation or finances. That approach finds no support in Article III's case or controversy requirement or our case law interpreting that requirement, and it is as practically untenable as it is undemocratic. Premising standing on a candidate's risk of election loss or failure to achieve a certain vote threshold could channel many election disputes to shortly before Election Day, or worse, after. Only then will many candidates be able to predict with any certainty that a rule will be outcome determinative, and only then will they be able to produce the manner and degree of evidence required, particularly at later stages of the litigation, to establish standing. Yet this court has repeatedly emphasized that lower federal courts should ordinarily not alter the election rules on the eve of an election. Such late-breaking, court-ordered rule changes can result in voter confusion and consequent incentive to remain away from the polls, and thus undermine the confidence in the integrity of our electoral processes, essential to the functioning of our participatory democracy. The democratic consequences can be even more dire if courts intervene only after votes have been counted. Count first and rule upon legality afterwards is not a recipe for producing election results that have the public acceptance democratic stability requires. Even if some candidates could muster evidence well before Election Day that a rule will likely be outcome determinative, respondents and the dissent's approach would convert Article III judges into political prognosticators and invite findings on matters as to which neither judges nor anyone else can have any confidence. As a number of prominent historical figures can attest, not least among them Charles Evans Hughes and Thomas Dewey, accurately predicting electoral outcomes is not a simple endeavor. And if the prognosticators themselves lack the political clairvoyance to predict the winner after all votes have been cast, then surely judges are poorly positioned to assess whether a candidate's risk of loss months earlier is substantial. The limits of federal court's jurisdiction do not rest upon such unstable ground outside judicial expertise. Nor would requiring candidates to plead a substantial risk of harm to their vote share leave courts on any sure footing. Such an approach would force judges to assess whether an election rule is likely to disadvantage a particular candidate, and at least as respondents suggest, judges must then also ensure that any disadvantage is linked to reputational or financial harm. Judges are no better qualified to make such determinations than they are to assess a candidate's likelihood of winning or losing. Even if they could do so, this approach would still channel many disputes into post-election litigation. To bring a pre-election suit, a candidate would have to plead and prove that voters who take advantage of the challenged rule will favor his rivals. Doing so while campaigning for those same voters' support is not just awkward, but politically dangerous. particularly for new election rules, it may require divulging information about vulnerabilities that rival candidates could exploit. Faced with that prospect, many candidates are sure to wait until after votes are counted to sue. Adding monetary harm to the equation, as the concurrence proposes, would change none of this. Plaintiffs cannot manufacture standing by voluntarily incurring costs. They must incur those costs to mitigate or avoid a substantial risk of some independent harm. Acknowledging as much, the concurrence ultimately speculates that it is reasonably probable Congressman Bost's election will be at risk because of discrepancies in late arriving ballots. Such conjecture, beyond finding little support in the pleadings, carries all the concerns we have explained. And the concurrence's approach introduces a new one. Apparently, a candidate who pays poll watchers a penny would have standing, while one who relies on volunteers would not. Nothing about Article 3 requires this result. Candidates have a concrete and particularized interest in the rules that govern the counting of votes in their elections, regardless whether those rules harm their electoral prospects or increase the cost of their campaigns. Their interest extends to the integrity of the election and the democratic process by which they earn or lose the support of the people they seek to represent. Courts sometimes make standing law more complicated than it needs to be. We decline respondents' invitation to do so here. As a candidate for office, Congressman Bost has standing to challenge the rules that govern the counting of votes in his election. The judgment of the United States Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit is reversed, and the case is remanded for further proceedings consistent with this opinion. It is so ordered